Hello, my name's Mary Mack. I'm the Executive Director of ACEDS, the Association of Certified eDiscovery Specialists, and I want to welcome you to our ACEDS webinar channel for a very special edition of our TAR Talk podcast. We will be talking with, as usual, the TAR Talk twins, shall we say, John Tredenick, the CEO and founder, the former CEO and founder of Catalyst Repository Systems. Catalyst is our wonderful affiliate who is also sponsoring this particular event with OpenText, the combination thereof. And John has his own business now at TredenickLaw.com. We also have Tom Griggs, Managing Director of Professional Services at Catalyst. And I want to say, and I hesitate to, but only just for a quick second, as one of the lead eDiscovery Council in Global Aerospace, the first case in the country to authorize over the objection of opposing counsel. And
wrong, Mary, wrong.
I didn't say it.
Usually that's what Tom says. So I will let you go to it. Those of you who are on the line know that voice anywhere. That is Judge Andrew Peck. He is he was with, of course, the Southern District of New York for 23 years until his retirement in last February 2018. And since then, he's senior counsel at DLA Piper in New York, where he specializes in e-discovery advice, including as e-discovery counsel in major litigation, serving also as an arbitrator, mediator, and special master, which must just be, I would love to be a fly on the wall for that. Judge Peck, John, and Tom, welcome to the porch. Take it away, John.
Thank you so much, Mary, and we're honored to have our guest, the Honorable Andy Peck, the best in the world, and we're going to have some fun. It is a beautiful spring day on our virtual porch. Tom, what are you having to drink today in that rocker of yours?
Today, going with the weather, I am having a Sierra Vesa, one of the nice light lagers that I can drink.
Perfect. Mary Mack, what are you drinking?
Well, on my return from Japan, I brought myself a little sake.
Perfect. Are you drinking it warm or cold?
I did not know follow-up questions were allowed in the drinks department, but I am just... I'm drinking it warm, John.
That's the best way. Andy, what are you having to drink?
Really, I'm having my usual drink of choice, a Diet Coke. But on the virtual porch, I'm having a glass of champagne.
Well, this is very important because today we're going to play a new drinking game. It's called the Wizard Staff Drinking Game to find out who is the wisest wizard. And why are we doing the wizard? Because I'm pleased to announce the formation of my new company, Merlin Digital Magic. You can see us at merlindm.com. And we have wizards who love to play these drinking games. So this is an attempt to consume more beer than our opponents. As a player drinks, their current can of beer is taped to the top of the previous cans before being opened. So we'll be playing Wizard Staff. I would pay attention to the front part of TAR Talk because it could go downhill fast. And sadly, we've got a great but a serious topic to hit today. We better get at it instead of yucking around. The question that we wanted to think and talk about was, can we or should we force a producing party to use TAR? Or more precisely, can the opponent force it? Can the court? And we thought Judge Peck would be a great person to dig into this with us because he had the Hiles decision in 2016 when he said no. There may come a time when TAR is so widely used that it might be unreasonable for a party to decline to use TAR, but we are not there yet. Now, in contrast, knowing Judge Peck was a short timer, Judge Parker in the Winfield decision in 17 directed the city to begin using technology-assisted review. And with that, now Andy is a ghost in those halls. There's no telling if anybody's paying any attention to what he has to say. But Tom, let's dig in, and then we'll invite Andy into the party.
All right, John. A lot of this comes up from conversations that, as you know, I've had with our chief scientist, Dr. Jeremy Pickens. And Dr. Pickens can't believe the way lawyers handle technology-assisted review and the situations that we get ourselves into. And what he said was this to me. He said, what I don't understand is if you have someone using a TAR tool that stabilizes at 50% or 60% consistently, not a good result, really, but it stabilizes, and they say, geez, I can't do any better no matter how much money I spend. And they come into court and they say, Judge, don't make me do any more because proportionality says I shouldn't have to do it. What I want to ask you, Judge Peck, is can we start looking at this? Can we start saying to people, that's not good enough? You have to start looking at better technology, especially given, for example, Sedona's proportionality principle 6 that says you have to take technology into consideration. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's interesting that you presented the question as an inferior TAR tool versus a good TAR tool, because where it often comes up, where it came up both in Hiles against the city and Winfield against the city before Judge Parker, is a party using the good old-fashioned judicially despised keywords, and the opposing party trying to say, you know, why don't you use TAR? When Hiles came before me, there was no question in both parties' minds as to who I was as the author of, yes, Tom, the first judicial decision back in DeSilvermore in 2012. Keep the laughing to a minimum so parties can hear me here. The first decision approving the use of TAR, followed by the second in my trilogy, Rio Tinto, in 2015, where after reviewing all the other cases, I didn't write every TAR decision out there, but reviewing all the case law in the U.S. and in the what I'll call the English Commonwealth series, England, Ireland, and Australia, all the decisions that to that point said if a responding party wants to use TAR, they can. So there is no doubt that there is judicial acceptance of TAR. I think we're still not at a stage where the opposing party, which really means getting the court to do their work, can force a party to use TAR, at least not directly. First of all, forcing a party to use something they're not familiar or comfortable with is probably an invitation for a disaster down the road. As much as the three of us love TAR, it is not a Staples easy button. It is a combination, as everyone agrees, of people, processes, technology. And if you force someone to use it and they don't have a clue what they're doing, it's probably not going to work. Another factor, I think, is there may be lawyers and or their clients that can do keyword searching internally without needing to use a vendor, but if they're going to have to use TAR, they're going to have to go to a vendor, whether Catalyst or others, to supply that technology. So I don't think the court can or should at this stage force a reluctant party to use it. That doesn't mean that it's not going to be taken into effect in looking at proportionality or looking at fee shifting for the prevailing party at the end of the case. And I'll keep talking, or I'll throw it back to you to ask a question.
I had it on mute. My apologies. But you can scare them, I guess, and say, well, you can do crummy discovery, but if it doesn't work out well for you, I'm gonna think about fees or other things. Question, Judge Peck, the issue comes up. Now, we know that if I'm the defendant doing production and they say, what did you do, Mr. Defendant? And I said, well, I went over to my secretary's desk and I looked in the one drawer, right under the gum drawer, and I found some files and I produced them. That's not enough. And I think you wouldn't be hesitant to force them to say, well, I want you to go look in the filing cabinets or back in the workroom where all the good stuff is. I know we can force them, but how are you gonna approach this to determine? You're gonna bring in experts, and what if it's a crappy tar process and they say, well, Your Honor, we're using tar, but we can't get above 45% in the recall, and it would just be disproportionate. How do you approach it, or how should people approach those kind of issues? We want discovery on discovery. Yeah.
You know, I am not a big fan, to put it mildly, of discovery on discovery. Main Sedona principles, not the Sedona proportionality principles, but the Sedona principles, third edition, on which I was on the drafting team. Principle 6, which has been the bedrock of the Sedona principles, is that the responding party generally is in the best position to decide how it is going to fulfill its obligations under the federal rules to do a reasonable and proportionate production. So discovery on discovery should only occur when there is a demonstrable deficiency. Sometimes you have to wait until the end of the day for that. Other times you can tell from what the party has said it's going to do, like your example of only looking in a single drawer in the old paper days, that you know there's a problem and the court can step in. As to the use of experts, I mean, my God, everybody has been complaining probably since the birth of the federal rules, long before my time, but certainly in the ESI world, that discovery is already much too expensive. To bring experts in is only going to increase the cost. If you look at the Clean Products case, which was in front of then Magistrate Judge Nan Nolan in Chicago, there were 3 days of hearings where the experts on each side, one side wanting keywords, the other wanting a tar-like process, had to testify. They were probably, with all the lawyers and experts in the room for each of those hearings, running at, you know, tens of thousands of dollars an hour. That seems to me is turning discovery into a sideshow. And I said in De Silva Moore that I did not think expert testimony was necessary. That does not mean that the parties do not have to educate the court. So I was lucky in De Silva Moore. I knew a bit about predictive coding, aka TAR. But if you're getting in front of a judge who doesn't have that background, or if the lawyers don't know whether the judge does or doesn't, they need to educate the judge as to what they're talking about. You know, that may mean bringing in someone from the vendor side, someone like Tom. It may mean one of the lawyers on the team has to explain it to the judge. But please, no expert testimony. As to the, you know, parties who are not doing a good enough job, you can't, whether it's using a bad TAR tool, whether it's using keywords, whether it's even worse saying we're just going to have attorney eyes on every document because that's the way my grandfather did it and that's the gold standard. No, there has to be some reasonableness to it, and you can't say a perfectly good request is disproportionate to the needs of the case and the other proportionality factors because you are going to use an inefficient review process. So, you know, if one is going to say, I'm going to use keywords and then have my X hundred dollars an hour associates read every document that the keywords hit, and that's going to cost, you know, several million dollars, so the request is disproportionate. That's not likely to pass muster in front of most judges.
All right, that you know, this conversation takes me to two questions. And you know, one of them is this, Judge, I seem to recall there was maybe one or two cases, I don't remember, in 2012 that dealt with technology-assisted review, a couple of them maybe. We're talking about a time now.
Published.
we're seven years down the road, and we're still saying we're going to let lawyers not use this technology, despite the obligation of technology competence in the ABA rules. And if they don't know how to do it, maybe we're going to give them a pass. That's question one. Question two is, okay, maybe you don't tell them to use TAR, but tell them to get the discovery done in 30 days, because if you actually did use a good tool, a good process, and an efficient technique, you get there. Are those kind of things something that you consider as you're sitting on the bench to talk to people about pushing them in the direction of doing something that is maybe a little bit more efficient?
Yes and no. First of all, I was always a firm believer in running a rocket docket in my courtroom, but I do think it's not fair to the parties to say use any method you want, but you got to get it done by tomorrow or 30 days, whatever it may be. In big cases, as I'm seeing more and more now that I'm back in the trenches as a consulting lawyer, it's not that easy. Now, you know, I think the problem is we all live in what some people call the Sedona bubble, the e-discovery bubble, where most of our colleagues are familiar with TAR and use TAR. That's not the real world out there. If we were at a point where 50% of federal cases had parties using TAR, or 75%, you know, pick whatever number you want, and then you had the Luddites who said, nope, you know, look at my bald head, Judge, I'm not going into that TAR stuff, then you could start telling them, as you know, one started doing in 2005, 2006, when lawyers were trying to skip the whole e-discovery process because they had never done it before. There's a point where that has to change. At this point, if the courts were suddenly going to say everybody has got to use TAR if the case involves more than X 100,000 documents, there would be a lot of lawyers changing who would have to change what they're doing. And I don't think the court can be that far in front of where parties are. I do think that a party who comes in and asks for a ridiculous length of time, you know, regardless of the system they're using, is not going to do it. It's not going to work. If a lawyer says, I'm going to use X method and there are a million emails and therefore it's going to take me 5 years to review, no, it's not happening. 30 days might not be the right answer, but one is going to, you know, judges get a feel for how long it should take if they know what the volume is, and will set a reasonable schedule accordingly. I did not find that necessarily forced parties to be more efficient and use TAR, as opposed to throw more bodies at the review of the keyword hits. So that may not work. I do think, you know, this is a much slower build than we would have expected, certainly what I would have expected, if not after De Silva Moore in 2012, after Rio Tinto in 2015, I would have expected there to be a much, much greater usage of TAR. There hasn't been. I was asked at Legal Tech a few years ago, You know, what did I see as the future? In the future, in 5 years, did I think that, you know, people would be using tar more? And my response, and this was probably 5 years ago, was, yep, everybody is going to be using tar. And there was, you know, a gasp from the moderator. He didn't expect that. And I said, yeah, and that's because, you know, somebody is going to invent a better form of AI, and everybody will be too conservative to use that, so they'll finally use the then older tool of tar. But, you know, we are making progress, and I certainly think that the shift in technology from the old TAR 1.0, where you had to stabilize the system, and there was a concern on the part of the requesting side that if they didn't have visibility into the training of the system, that therefore once the system stabilized, they would not be getting all the hot documents they were hoping for. Now that we're in a mostly TAR 2.0 CAL continuous active learning world, where every responsive document continues to train the system, so there is no need to fight about, you know, what the seed set should be or how the system is being trained up front. Every responsive document will be reviewed and produced. So I think that is going to help. And that some of the urban legends that resulted from the fights over TAR 1.0, or some of just the misunderstanding that, you know, I'm not going to produce documents unless we've had at least one human eye on them, of those people who think TAR means the system decides what's produced and the lawyers don't look at what's being produced, you know, those sort of urban legends are being put to bed.
Well, let me jump in then. Kind of the closing question. And you know, I'm not with Catalyst anymore, but I'll tell you that over the years, I don't think we ever saw a case where TAR didn't improve and often dramatically improve the results. I don't think we're unique in that regard. But is there ever going to come a time when we require a party to use TAR, assuming there's not something better, as you said? What is it going to take, do you think, Judge Peck? And we'll close out on that thought.
I think it's going to take more lawyers going to TAR because the vendor pricing has come down, and because they are seeing more and more opponents or judicial decisions or, you know, articles in the press talking about AI and the efficiency and effectiveness of it. I think also it is going to require clients to take a firmer stand. You know, I have to be careful what I say about what I'm doing nowadays, but not all clients are jumping with joy when I say, you know, let's talk about using TAR. You know, and so it's a combination that the lawyers have to push it to the client, and or, and most importantly, since it's the client who's paying the bill, the client has to insist on it. I think also it is going to be resolved through the back door, so to speak, in that even if neither party raises the issue during discovery about use of TAR versus keywords, that if the party prevails who used an inefficient way of document review and production, that the court is going to seriously reduce their fee request. And when the client learns that, in their next case, they are more likely to push for TAR. So it's the not getting reimbursed for the costs of it that may have the biggest effect.
Well, oh, holy smokes. Not only are we about 25 minutes into our program, and it's been a great program, but I just looked over and Tom Grix's wizard staff is now on the 11th can. I'm going to have to call it just out of the protection of the participants involved. Judge Peck, you were wonderful. today. I hope you'll come back regularly and join us for Tar Talks. I want to thank you at least, and please tell me you'll come back, even if Tom Grix is here.
I'll come back as long as Tom and Mary don't spread this vicious rumor that he was first when he admitted he was second.
That was just a typo, Judge.
I'm terribly sorry.
Mary Mac, thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you to all the wonderful people at ASEDS. It's been a lot of fun, and we can't wait to see you again.
Yeah, and thanks to all who are listening in to our live podcast. We'll be putting out a link, and you can share with your friends. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you on the next time on the virtual porch. Thanks, John. Thanks, Tom. And thank you very much, Judge Mac.
Thank you.